Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, December 6th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Region Shoulders Load of Energy. Ingham Railroad Commission District 8 is only one of Commission's districts to have grown significantly. By Mella McEwen. A post-COVID-19 pandemic world that is also seeking new, reliable, and secure energy sources in the aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine is turning to the United States. More specifically, the world is turning to Texas, and even more specifically, to the Permian Basin and its energy riches. Carr Ingham, petroleum economist at the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, says the Permian Basin is the only major producing region in the country to not only recover its production loss to the pandemic, but return to record and growing production. But for all its riches, there are parts of the Permian Basin that have yet to return to pre-pandemic levels of production, according to Ingham. In fact, he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview, Railroad Commission District 8, centered around Midland, is the only one of the Commission's districts to have grown production significantly. RRC District 8, Midland, is shouldering the load, not just in terms of growing Texas production, but also U.S. national production as well, said Ingham. It was clear early on in 2022, when the need for a global crude oil supply solution became more apparent, that Texas was the only logical source of that production, the Permian Basin specifically. And in the Permian, that means RRC District 8 and the New Mexico Permian. The New Mexico portion of the Permian, primarily Eddy and Lee counties, have pushed New Mexico to record production levels. New Mexico is joined by Utah as the only other producing state to have returned to record and growing production. Texas overall is struggling to return to its pre-COVID record of 5.45 million barrels a day, though it is close, Ingham said. The Eagle Ford, he noted, is down not only nearly 200,000 barrels a day from pre-COVID levels, but is down over 35,000 barrels compared to its peak in 2015. The Texas Petro Index, Ingham prepares monthly for the Alliance, reflects the tepid expansion the state's industry is seeing despite high crude and natural gas prices and continued growth in the rig count and employment. Industry constraints are the real deal, said Ingham. Employees are hard to come by. Equipment is hard to come by. Rigs are hard to come by. It's no longer as simple as grabbing a rig out of the yard. They need to be reworked and upgraded and invested in. And even then, they need staff. Access to capital is also a constraint, as investors shun the industry over its environmental impact and their desire to focus on ESG, environment, social, and governance investing. The industry's profitability, though, is beginning to attract capital back, he observed. But these are issues the industry has faced and overcome in the past, Ingham noted. And it would have overcome these issues more quickly, except for a couple of factors, he said. This time, COVID is something we've never experienced before, a situation we've never recovered from before, he said. Take that unique experience, stir in the other constraints, and add in what Ingham calls the administration's hostile approach to the industry and its legislation and incentives supporting renewable energy, and there's no way this doesn't shift resources away from oil and gas development and toward renewables. Those incentives, and what he terms artificial subsidies, make economic things that are not economic. All of these issues can be solved over time, Ingham continued, if the market is allowed to work. The less the market has to do with these issues, the less rapidly they will be solved, he said. This article is entitled, Thomas Makes Tremendous Improvements at College. MC sees advancements in instruction, student services, technological infrastructure. By Rebecca Bell, Midland College. Steve Thomas began serving as Midland College's fourth and current president on August 15, 2008. However, he was no stranger to Midland College when he arrived. Thomas first served at Midland College as a psychology instructor in 1979 and continued working at the college until 1987. He then worked as an administrator, serving as dean at Lexington Community College in Lexington, Kentucky, and at Victoria College in Southeast Texas. From 2000 to 2008, Thomas served as president of Vernon College, northwest of Wichita Falls. Thomas has served on numerous state and local advisory committees and organizations, including the Executive Committee of the Texas Association of Community Colleges, Community College Formula Advisory Committee for the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, and the TACC Advisory Committee for the Commission on Community College Finance. In 2004, Thomas was presented with the Distinguished Graduate Award from the University of Texas at Austin College of Education for his national contribution to American community colleges. During the past 14 years under Thomas's leadership, Midland College has seen tremendous improvements in instruction, student services, and technological infrastructure. Some of the major accomplishments the college has enjoyed during this time include implementing early college high school at Midland College in partnership with Midland ISD and community donors, securing a branch campus maintenance tax for the Williams Regional Technical Training Center in Fort Stockton in cooperation with the voters of Pecos County, establishing the Midland College, Midland ISD College and Careers Academies designed for training and educational programs that benefit the Midland economy by providing a skilled workforce, implementing a dual credit service center located at the Midland College Advanced Technology Center that helped increase dual credit enrollment from 921 students in fall 2019 to 1,456 in fall 2021. Renovating the Al G. Langford Chaparral Center to include the installation of an elevator, larger restrooms, upgraded dressing rooms, and refurbishing the retractable bleachers. Expanding the Scarborough Student Center to include the June and Frank Cowden Jr. Dining Hall, a beautiful 18,600-square-foot facility that has adequate seating and kitchen facilities for future growth. Joining forces with Midland ISD to establish a pre-kindergarten academy. This program helps to fulfill two immediate needs for the Midland community: quality early childhood education, and hands-on training for students who want to become early childhood teachers. Instructional milestones. In addition to the above, Thomas has led Midland College to become a state leader in several instructional programs. Midland College was one of nine partner community colleges in a project coordinated through the Charles A. Dana Center at the University of Texas to design a systemic approach to improving student access and completion in developmental math courses. MC's cutting-edge curriculum laid the foundation for statewide implementation at other Texas community colleges. The MathWays project garnered exemplary awards from the Texas Success Center in 2015 and again in 2016. In fall 2015, Midland College partnered with Midland Memorial Hospital, the University of North Texas, and Texas College of Osteopathic Medicine to establish an accelerated educational partnership entitled Primary Care Pathway Program. Students in this program are able to enter medical school in 3 years and will help to fill the need for qualified medical doctors in Midland and rural West Texas. Adding to its first baccalaureate degree in organizational management, Midland College now offers two additional bachelor degrees, one in health services management, approved in December 2015, and one in early childhood education, beginning in fall 2022. All of these degrees help to meet community employment needs. In 2016, Midland College transformed its enrollment management system to include a guided pathways approach to assisting students make informed choices about their college careers. The college was among 12 community colleges chosen for the Texas Pathways Project, which focuses on student success. Midland College received the distinction as a Cadre 1 community college in this endeavor to lead the integrated statewide approach to student success. In February 2019, Midland College partnered with Concho Resources and Texas A&M University to form the Concho Texas A&M Engineering Academy at Midland College. Students interested in pursuing engineering careers are able to enroll simultaneously at both Midland College and Texas A&M for the first year or two of their higher education journeys and take all classes on the Midland College campus before transferring to Texas A&M in College Station. This opportunity allows students and their families to take advantage of Midland College's lower tuition rates and numerous donor-directed scholarships. Thanks to donations from Concho Resources, the Technology Center on the main campus was renovated to house a hands-on engineering lab, and a donation from the Henry Foundation helped to renovate adjacent space into the state-of-the-art Paula and Jim Henry Innovations Center. Other renovations of instructional space include converting several traditional classrooms in various buildings into active learning spaces that implement current technology and enhance teaching and learning. In addition, under Thomas's direction, the college transformed the Faskin Learning Resource Center library into a student-centered hub for research, study, and lecture events. Keeping the doors open. In spring 2020, Thomas led the college in what has perhaps been its most challenging mission, that of maintaining operations and not interrupting instruction during the midst of the global COVID-19 pandemic. Within 2 weeks of the nationwide shutdown, Midland College transformed all of its courses to online and virtual formats. The college remained in operation, and in fall 2021, enrollment increased to pre-COVID levels. A pleasure and a privilege. As I have said, it is a pleasure and a privilege to be the president of Midland College, Thomas remarked in a 2018 interview with the Midland Reporter-Telegram. I have the advantage of working with an experienced and professional board of trustees who have supported my leadership from day one. As a valuable resource for Midland and the region, we can never rest on our laurels. We can never become self-satisfied with our accomplishments, and we can never stop improving our programs and services for our students and community, because our community expects nothing less. Midland College is fortunate to have a gifted and talented group of faculty and staff who do great work day in and day out, and who challenge me to do my best every day. The author of this article, Rebecca Bell, is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College. This article is entitled, Bar Grill Gets Okay to Sell Alcohol. Richard Milburn Academy to P&Z. School neither supports nor opposes request. By Mella McEwen. Elisama Corzo appeared before the Planning and Zoning Commission a second time Monday, seeking a specific use designation to serve the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption at Texas Lodge Bar and Grill at 503 East Interstate 20, Suite 130. This time, she was successful, as commissioners unanimously approved the request after deferring it at the last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Commissioners had hesitated last month because Texas Lodge is 250 feet to the west of the Richard Milburn Academy, a Texas public charter school for 9th through 12th graders. After Richard Milburn Academy officials received a certified letter seeking comment on the request, they replied that they neither supported nor opposed the request. Academy officials added that the school intends to vacate its location in the Belmont Marketplace Shopping Center by March, as soon as construction at a new location is complete. City officials also stated that there is Garrily's Mexican restaurant about 75 feet east of the school, and it already has an alcohol SUD, which was approved on December 8, 2021. A wrong judgment call was made that the school was private. Since then, city officials contacted Richard Milburn Academy, and they have clarified that they are a public school for 9th through 12th graders. Texas Lodge is currently in operation without a designation and operates from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily. It proposes alcohol service during those same hours. In other action, commissioners unanimously approved a request by Jorge Chavez for a zone change from MF22, Multiple Family Dwelling District, to SF3, Single Family Dwelling District, in order to construct a single-family residence at 609 South Clay Street. Commissioners also unanimously approved a proposed preliminary plat of two lots at the intersection of Humble Avenue and Marianfield Street for the purpose of reconfiguring lot space. This article is entitled Bynum Schools Serves Special Needs Students in Permian Basin by Bynum School. Since 1984, Bynum School has taught, encouraged, and loved students and adults with disabilities in the Permian Basin. It is the only private or public year-round school for students with special needs in the area. As our population grows, so does the need for quality services for students with disabilities. Since moving to a new campus on Avalon Drive in 2018, Bynum School's enrollment has more than doubled. Currently, the school serves 117 individuals from age 3 to adult. We focus on abilities, not disabilities. Bynum School was created to serve children who face educational challenges because of disabilities. Our students exhibit intellectual disabilities, autism spectrum disorders, learning disabilities of all types, unique and rare syndromes, and medical fragility. Most students are challenged by multiple disabling conditions. We provide personalized educational, behavioral, and vocational programs integrated into the overall educational experience for students. They include, in addition to academics, interactive day camps during the summer and holidays, family and sibling support projects, speech therapy, neurological music therapy, occupational therapy, and a job coaching program for older teens and adults as part of our vocational program. Students of all ages participate in serving the Permian Basin community through volunteer projects for Meals on Wheels, the West Texas Food Bank, and more. Many of our current families would not be able to attend Bynum School without a student grant. 57% of students currently receive a student grant, which can cover up to two-thirds of a student's cost of attending Bynum School. During the 2022-23 school year, Bynum School anticipates awarding $500,000 in student grants. Bynum School can provide student grants only because of the generosity of individual, corporate, and foundation donors. The school receives no state or federal funding. Many families of a child with special needs find it possible to afford the school only through student grants. One parent of a primary school student writes, "Before I discovered Bynum School, my main concern was uncertainty if N would be understood. I was having a hard time finding a place that I felt would work with him according to his specific needs. I didn't feel confident in any of the schools that I was looking into. I felt that the only obstacle to his attendance at Bynum School would be the cost of tuition. Then I discovered that the school offers grants, which has helped lift so much of the financial burden." Student grants provide more families the opportunity to attend Bynum School, reduce the financial burden on families who have medical and therapy expenses, enable students to enroll in programs that help them develop independent living skills, serve the community, and enable Bynum School to continue operating without using tax-generated revenue. Bynum School provides parents of the Permian Basin the opportunity for school choice based on the educational, vocational, and behavioral needs of their child. Providing student grants is one way of helping parents make that decision to meet the needs of their children. Give now to help Bynum School continue to offer student grants to families who need them. Thank you, Permian Basin, for allowing Bynum School to help individuals with disabilities and their families since 1984. Please consider us in your year-end giving plans. This article is entitled, SHARE Provides Support for Families with Special Needs, by Tracy Hopper, SHARE. Editor's note, this article from SHARE is another in the series from a local nonprofit highlighting its service during the giving season. Sharing Hands, a respite experience, partners with all family members of children with special needs, supporting their efforts to build and maintain strong and successful families. SHARE envisions a world where parents have access to supportive programs that enable families to experience the joy of their journey. Raising a child with special needs is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week job. Parents are juggling work, doctor appointments, therapies, school meetings, learning more about their child's disability, and caring for their other children. That leaves little or no time to care for themselves. This is where SHARE can help. SHARE offers Friday night respite, parent support, sibling support, mom's night out, dad's night out, family and holiday events, resources, conferences, counseling, and in-home respite. These services help give caregivers a break from daily activities and help build a stronger family unit. Sometimes families and friends don't know how to help, so they become distant or obsolete when the families need them most. This can leave families feeling isolated and alone. SHARE provides support and partners with different agencies to get them out into the community. Just to name a few partners, Midland Soccer Association, Top Soccer, Synergy, Sensory Movies, We Rock the Spectrum, Gym, and other local agencies. What is the African proverb, "It takes a village to raise a child"? This is so true with a family raising a child with special needs. When families join SHARE, they immediately become part of the Shamily, or SHARE family. A quote we hear most is, "We have finally found our people. They understand and care about our family." Because of our generous community, we are able to provide families in Midland, Odessa, and surrounding areas with the support they need to build and maintain strong, successful families at no cost to them. In the spirit of sharing and giving, we encourage you to share in the journey by giving at sharewtx.org. Tracy Hopper is the executive director at Sharing Hands, a respite experience. This article is entitled, Jewelry Store Has Something for All Price Points. Editor's note, during the month of December, BizBuzz will look at opportunities to buy local items this holiday season. By Ben Schaffer. Finding the right piece of jewelry for your partner during the holiday season can be difficult. Occasions Fine Jewelry at 2308 West Loop 250 North has the product and guidance to satisfy all Christmas gift givers. Whitney Smith of Occasions advised shoppers to take notice of the accessories and styles your significant other frequently wears. Know their style. Pay attention to what jewelry they're wearing the most, she said. Smith added this would help the occasion staff and customers collaborate to narrow down the right pieces to put under the tree. Occasions has accessible quality fine jewelry at all price points. Down to $10 to $15 little silver studs, up to a 10-carat diamond that is $195,000. And things even bigger and more extravagant than that. We really have something for everybody, Smith said. Occasion's wide selection includes engagement rings, necklaces and chains, fashion rings, bracelet, charms and watches, with the most popular item being diamond stud earrings around Christmas. The family-owned business was founded in 1989 by Mike Fleck. It's now owned by his son Michael Fleck, with employees who have been on staff for much of its existence. It's easy to come and see a familiar face, even if you've been shopping with us for 15-plus years, and I don't think that's something you can get everywhere, Smith said. Occasions calls its warranty the greatest warranty on earth because there's no charge, red tape, or hassle. If anything ever happens to your jewelry, you lose the center diamond, your dog chews it up, it falls into a blender, you run it over with your car, we'll fix it for free, no questions asked, as long as you have the pieces for it, she said. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, Is Downtown Right for Entertainment District? By Stuart Doreen, Midland Reporter-Telegram editor. Ask me about an entertainment district, and my first reaction is, what's the purpose, and how much more are the taxpayers going to foot to bill for downtown revitalization? I am not against downtown, or the efforts made there, including the creation of Centennial Park and the Bush Convention Center. Those were worthwhile. In the case of the Bush Convention Center, it was worth tens of millions of public dollars that are being dedicated to its building and operations. The same goes with the public funding for the operations of Centennial Plaza. Now, attention has moved to creating an entertainment district, something that has been talked about for decades. It seems harmless enough. Maybe Midland will widen some walkways and traffic control. Will it bring the ultimate reward? Hard to see it. There are a lot of conversations about turning downtown into something that people experience elsewhere. There are big problems with these comparisons. One, Midland doesn't have the population, doesn't have the repeatable clientele to create the business needed, and doesn't have the funding to fill in gaps that are required when one talks about development of an area as costly as downtown. Midland is getting younger, but doesn't have the college population or sheer population to be like Fort Worth or one of those cool metropolitan areas with a hip entertainment scene. To be frank, while philanthropic donors here have gone above and beyond with Centennial Park, there isn't the sheer amount of donated dollars that we see in Fort Worth. And because of the lousy allotment of sales tax funding inside the city of Midland, our ability to be creative with public funding is limited. It is no different than parks. The downtown revitalization is a tough nut to crack. Last week, we learned the Low Street Books is closing. That is another business that hasn't made it, even with projects like Centennial already in place. Does that mean give up? No. But let's be certain. We have made choices in Midland during the years. We decided to put a baseball stadium in West Midland instead of downtown. Decisions were made to pave the area where the Midland Savings Building once stood, instead of putting a theater and shops there, which was proposed. We probably should create an entertainment district, and that is in West Midland. We have an area from the Scarborough Sports Complex down to the most active movie theater in Midland, ripe for the type of development that fits an entertainment district. You have the roadways to bring people in and out of the district. You have drivers of entertainment activity, with theaters, sports, ballparks, and restaurants already in place. You have easier opportunities to pitch future places that are right for 20 and 30-somethings looking for a good time. I don't know if a Dave and Buster's or Main Event or any place one might see on a Maybe in Midland wish list will come to Midland, but chances are they will prefer the opportunities that come with being in West Midland. West Midland is a strength of Midland when it comes to luring those types of businesses. Just like Midland International Airport is a strength for economic development purposes. And Northeast Midland is the new center for residential development. And I'm all for playing to one's strengths. I can imagine a West Midland in 5 to 10 years with a trolley going up and down Tradewinds Boulevard, allowing Midlanders the ability to park and be entertained for hours. Do we have the imagination to make it happen as a community? If something is going to happen downtown, We need to be purposeful with our actions, and we need to clear with the people of Midland on why it is necessary to add to the 60-plus million minimum we have spent downtown on projects like the Bush Center, Centennial, the Lofts on Main Street, and the Wall Street redesign in the name of downtown revitalization. We need to know when we seek to create an entertainment district, we are picking the place that makes the most sense for Midland. One can be a fan of what has taken place downtown and still feel comfortable asking that question. I know I am. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Oil Slumps Further Below $80 by Julia Fanzarez, Bloomberg. Oil fell the most in more than 2 weeks as broader equity markets collapse and risk-averse investors pared crude positions ahead of the end of the year. West Texas Intermediate futures shed 3.8% to settle below $77 a barrel after earlier topping $82 on Monday. Stronger than expected U.S. economic data fueled speculation that the Federal Reserve would keep its policy tight to fight inflation, sending a gauge of the U.S. dollar higher. Earlier in the session, WTI gained as much as 3.4% after China announced further easing of COVID restrictions in some of its largest cities. Monday also marked the beginning of a European Union and Group of Seven cap on Russian crude prices at $60 a barrel. The noise surrounding headlines is keeping traders from engaging in the market, said Rebecca Babin, a senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth Management. Many have decided to tune out altogether. Volumes are light, and positioning is decimated, as it seems prudent to wait until 2023. Oil has swung inside of a $10 range in recent weeks as market weighs restrictions on Russian supply and China's reopening against the risk of an economic slowdown in the U.S. and other parts of the world struggling to contain inflation. Futures holdings continue to plunge as the year draws to a close. Open interest in main oil contracts is the lowest since 2015, indicating that traders have pared back positions amid a number of risks, including the future of Russian supply. The price cap deal for Russian crude was months in the making, as the U.S. expressed concern that the EU's bar on Russia's oil and related insurance and financing services would lead to a damaging price spike. Still, the level now agreed upon is about $10 above Russia's key Urals grade, suggesting its impact on those flows may be limited. In Asia, however, the ceiling is below the price for Espo crude, which is loaded from Russia's Far East. For now, traders are waiting to judge the long-term impact of the sanctions and if shipping and insurance restrictions will obstruct flows. Although some ships are stuck near Turkey, in part due to the changes, there has been no widespread disruption. This article is entitled, OPEC Plus Pauses as Russia Sanctions, China COVID Rules, Royal Crude Markets, by Salma L. Wardeny, Grant Smith, and Ben Bartenstein, Bloomberg. OPEC Plus responded to surging volatility and growing market uncertainty by keeping oil production unchanged. The outcome of the brief online meeting on Sunday reflects the unpredictability of supply and demand in the coming months, and the world price gyrations in the last week. The oil producers group has only just implemented the hefty 2 million barrel a day reduction agreed at its last meeting. Meanwhile, European Union sanctions on crude exports from Russia come into effect on Monday, and China is tentatively easing the COVID measures that have eroded its fuel consumption. With massive and offsetting fundamental and geopolitical risks bearing down on the oil market, ministers understandably opted to hold steady and hunker down, said Bob McNally, president of Rapidan Energy Advisors. Brent crude rose 0.6% to $86.05 a barrel by 1:55 p.m. in Singapore on Monday. Chinese stocks and the yuan also rallied. The oil benchmarks up 11% this year, but has fallen from more than $120 a barrel in June amid increasing concern among traders about a global economic slowdown. The decision by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies should hold for at least a few months. The group's joint ministerial monitoring committee, led by Saudi Arabia and Russia, will meet again in February. The outlook could be clearer by then, and the panel has the power to call extraordinary meetings if it thinks output policy may need to change. The next full ministerial meeting is scheduled for June 4th. The oil market could look quite different by 2023, with several potentially historic shifts in supply and demand unfolding in the coming days and weeks. As OPEC Plus ministers convened their roughly 20-minute video conference, officials in Shanghai had just eased some COVID restrictions, joining other Chinese cities as authorities accelerate a shift toward reopening the economy after thousands of demonstrators took to the streets. Top government officials over the past week have signaled a transition away from the harshest containment measures which have weighed on the economy in the world's largest oil importer. On Monday, the EU will ban most seaborne imports of Russian crude and block anyone else from using the region's shipping or insurance services for purchases of Russian oil, unless it's done so below a $60 a barrel price cap. It's unclear to what extent those measures will curtail Russian exports. The price cap is comfortably above the $50 that the country's flagship Urals grade of crude currently trades at, according to data from Argus Media. Yet Moscow has said it would rather cut production than sell oil to anyone that adopts the price cap. With these powerful forces poised to push oil markets in unpredictable directions, OPEC watchers said the group's decision was understandable. OPEC Plus rolled over the existing quotas as expected amid uncertainty around Russian flows following the price cap and a weaker China, said Amrita Sen, chief oil analyst and co-founder at consultant Energy Aspects. The group will continue to monitor markets, and should fundamentals deteriorate, they will meet prior to June. Sunday's meeting was a calmer affair than the last one in early October, which created a diplomatic spat. President Joe Biden slammed OPEC Plus for the supply reduction, accusing Riyadh of aiding Russia's war in Ukraine by bolstering prices. Since then, the market's fluctuations have given the group a sense of vindication. The cut was purely driven by market considerations and recognized in retrospect by the market participants to have been the necessary and the right course of action towards stabilizing global oil markets, OPEC said in a statement. This article is entitled Trade Group: Oilfield Services Industry Adds 2,300 Jobs in November, by Kyra Buckley, Houston Chronicle. Companies that provide equipment, labor, and technology for oil and gas drilling continue to add workers, but employment in the oilfield services sector remains below pre-pandemic levels. In November, employment in oilfield services and equipment ticked up by more than 2,300 jobs nationwide to 645,486, according to preliminary federal data analyzed by the industry group Energy Workforce and Technology Council. U.S. rig count unchanged amid oil price swings and labor shortage. The latest increase in our sector is very encouraging, said Energy Workforce CEO Leslie Beyer. We now have almost gained back all the jobs lost since March of 2020, when the pandemic began to significantly hit the labor market. Employment in the sector has inched back up to its highest level since the pandemic hit in March of 2020, but still sits about $60,000 below February 2020 numbers. Texas is consistently the largest employer in the country for oilfield services workers. The group estimates Texas is home to nearly 315,000 oilfield services jobs, more than 9% boost from the 287,000 in the beginning of the year. This article is entitled, Saudi Arabia Cuts Oil Prices for Asia Amid Signs of Weak Demand, by Anthony DiPaola and Serene Cheong, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia lowered most oil prices for Asia, its main market, in a sign the outlook for demand remains fragile amid continued COVID lockdowns in China. State-controlled Saudi Aramco cut its key Arab Light grade for January sales to Asia by $2.20 to $3.25 a barrel above the regional benchmark. The move was in line with refiners' and traders' prediction of a drop of $2.10, according to a Bloomberg survey, and takes the price to its lowest level since March. Brent crude's up 13% this year to almost $88 a barrel, but it has fallen from more than $120 a barrel in June amid increasing concern among investors about rising inflation and a global economic slowdown. Saudi Arabia's neighbor and fellow OPEC member Kuwait on Friday said that oil customers were reluctant to boost imports this year. Aramco's decision came a day after the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners, a 23-nation group led by the Saudis and Russia, opted to keep output steady. The company also reduced most prices for European customers while leaving those for the U.S. unchanged.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, December 6th. Is Marrero's job on the line Tuesday? Council will evaluate him again during meeting. The Odessa City Council is scheduled to discuss the use of ARPA funds, an employee compensation study, and the performance of Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero during its regularly scheduled workshop meeting Monday. The Odessa City Council voted unanimously to hire an outside firm to conduct a compensation study of all city employees in July after it was revealed the Odessa Fire Rescue has lost more than 60 employees over the last 2 years. Evergreen Solutions has since informed the council the city's public safety employees are paid at least 15% below those in peer cities, but those numbers do not include add-on pay firefighters are given for certain certifications they acquire as part of their job. Evergreen said, on average, the city is paying its general government employees 4-7% below their peer cities. Last month, Evergreen Solutions said preliminary figures show that if the city were to decide to only address beginning salaries for general government and public safety employees, it would cost the city $7.5 million to $9.5 million. To address beginning salaries and compression for both sorts of employee groups, it could cost the city $9 million to $12 million, excluding extra costs associated with retirement and other benefits. A couple of attempts to give the firefighters raises prior to the completion of the compensation study have failed because a majority of the council wanted to wait to see the results. They also expressed concerns about how the city would sustain the raises beyond the next year. However, three of those council members were replaced November 22nd after running unopposed for the seats of Tom Sprawls, Deidre White, and Mary Willis. In addition, Mayor Javier Hoven also recently convinced Medical Center Hospital to repay a $3 million loan 22 months early, telling CEO Russell Tippin in a text he wanted to infuse salary increases in 1-4 year fire suppression OFR personnel. Councilwoman Denise Swanner has also expressed her belief American Rescue Plan Act money can be used for firefighter raises. Both Swanner and Councilman Mark Mata have also previously indicated they believe Odessans would be okay with paying more in taxes to fund fire department raises. City Manager Michael Marrero and Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy, have not returned repeated phone calls and texts on that topic. Marrero is one of five city employees who were evaluated in October, but he and the others are scheduled to be evaluated again on Tuesday. Rumors have been swirling that Marrero's job is in danger. Councilman Steve Thompson said he doesn't know why the evaluations are back on the agenda considering they just happened. And new council members Chris Haney, Greg Connell, and Gilbert Vasquez were just sworn in. Thompson questions how they can offer a legitimate opinion on any of the employees, which include Judges Keith Kidd and Carlos Rodriguez, City Secretary Norma Aguilar Grimaldo, and City Attorney Natasha Brooks. Because the evaluations that took place in October were in executive session, Thompson, who has been on the council 2 years, said he can't discuss what was said about any of them. However, he said his worst fear is a majority of the council members will vote to fire Marrero, and the others were placed on the agenda as window dressing. Lately, Thompson said Hoven, Swanner, and Mata have been corresponding with city staff via email, but excluding him. The only reason he knows that is city staff includes him in the responses. He said, I think it's sneaking around. They've got some agenda, and I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's just not ethical, Thompson said. In his view, Marrero is doing an excellent job, Thompson said. Michael's well qualified for the job, Thompson said. He's a good delegator. His people work hard for him. They like him. They respect him. Over the past 2 years, I can't identify anything he's done to warrant being dismissed or being asked to resign or whatever you want to call it. But I feel that is their interest, and I've got no way to stop it. Thompson called Marrero a fine young man who is forthright and spends time answering council members' questions. The problem is the council keeps running around him. Mata, Swanner, and the mayor go around him, straight to department heads and so forth. They micromanage, and that's not fair, Thompson said. My prayer is that these three new councilmen will let their conscience be their guide. Hoven, Mata, and Swanner did not respond to texts, and Vasquez and Haney did not return phone calls. Connell said he doesn't know why the evaluations were placed on the agenda, but he's been conducting some research. Basically, it's just been seeing what I can find online in the Odessa American and touching base with people. You need to try to reach out and get a feel, Connell said. He's been using the city directory to find people to speak with, Connell said. If there is an assistant to a person, then I would go to that person. If there was a secretary listed, just using the directory, Connell explained. In other matters, the city is scheduled to discuss leasing 6 vehicles for a year to be used by undercover police officers. Acme Auto Leasing is offering to rent the vehicles at $795 a month each for a total estimated cost of $57,240. Trustees to hear TIP plans. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will meet in a workshop at 6 p.m. today in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue, to hear several presentations. There will be a presentation and discussion of the 2022-2023 Targeted Improvement Plan, TIPS, led by Director of Leadership, Susan Hendricks. The process for TIP development will be shared, and principals will share goals and strategies within their school's TIPS supplemental agenda material, said. The Texas Education Agency requires TIPS for schools who perform in the bottom 5% of Domain 3, closing the gaps in the accountability system. This year, the campuses are Chavazos, Dowling, Downing, Ireland, and Sam Houston. The board is required to approve targeted improvement plans every year. Trustees also will hear about the district's facilities program and dyslexia. Heidi Feltferich, 504 Dyslexia Supervisor, will present an update on the dyslexia program. She will provide an overview of the dyslexia program, including information regarding how students are screened, how they are served, and the curriculum used in the dyslexia classroom, the district dyslexia therapist, and a dyslexia grant. According to the addenda material, dyslexia is a learning disorder that affects the ability to read, write, spell, and speak. There are 1,249 dyslexia students, including 907 in general education and 342 in special education. For 2022, there were a total of 50 graduates with dyslexia. Odessa High School has 22, 82.35%, and 6 non-graduates, 17.65%. Permian has 21 graduates, or 84%, and 4 non-graduates, or 16%. OC Tech's and Odessa Collegiate Academy each have 2 students and both graduated. There are 34 dyslexia therapists. 6 also provide bilingual dyslexia instruction, the material detailed. 16 dyslexia therapists are certified academic language therapists, and 3 are also licensed dyslexia therapists. They serve all campuses. A dyslexia grant, Do You See What I See?, will also be reviewed. It's $240,523 for 1 year and $222,279 for 2 years. Juvenile Center back on agenda. In the second-to-last meeting of the calendar year, the Ector County Commissioners Court will decide if the new Juvenile Justice Center will go back out for bid. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said on Monday morning the potential bids would be planned for a 32-bed facility. Hayes said if approved during Tuesday's meeting, the purchasing department can start putting bid packages together. We've decreased the number of beds that we would build for the facility for now to help cut and curtail the cost, Hayes said. This agenda item and others will be heard at 10 a.m. Tuesday at the Ector County Administration Building Annex, located in Room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. During a November 8th meeting, a representative from HOK Architects spoke to the court about a trimmed-down facility that would cost about $26 million, which is still about $1 million over budget. The trimmed facility came after the original plan for the new 64-bed Juvenile Justice Center went through the bid process with 0 offers. HOK Architects gave recommendations to trim down the facility that take it from 64 beds to 32. Though the facility would be trimmed, Hayes said the architects drew up plans that would make it feasible to add on to the Juvenile Justice Center in the future. The way that the architects drew it up, it's very easy to build another living quarter pod onto this facility, Hayes said. It's easy to expand this facility to accommodate additional beds if needed in the future. The court will also consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the reappointment of Bill Ritter, Winston Kenworthy, Mark Merritt, Travis Fisher, and David Donham as members of the Ector County Airport Advisory Board to serve a 2-year term ending December 31, 2024. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to appoint Commissioner Greg Simmons to the Tax Incentive Committee and authorize the county judge and county commissioners to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the purchase of 2 Chevrolet Tahoes. Consider, review, discuss, and take any necessary action on the updated missing assets and the disposal list from the 2022 fixed asset inventory. Consider, discuss, award, reject, and take any necessary action regarding the following bid. Fire Extinguisher Services, bid number 22-11-2301, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, approve, reject, modify, and take any necessary action regarding the contract renewal of paper towels and bathroom tissue number 2, proposal number 2011-1301, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the subrecipient agreement with West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department, Gardendale Volunteer Fire Department, Goldsmith Volunteer Fire Department, and Ector County Water Utility District, contingent on these organizations receiving their SAM.gov number, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a subscription agreement with the Event Management Software Company Planning Pod, and authorize the county judge to sign and Coliseum director to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding upgrade to OmniGo software, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the renewal of a master agency agreement between Alcohol Monitoring Systems Incorporated, AMS, and Ector County, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the 2023 Ector County Resolution Indigent Defense Grant Program, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding change orders number 6 and number 7 for Moss Mill and Overlay, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding change orders number 4 and number 5 for the West Apple Street Road Project, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on Poppy Edition 1.025 acres, Section 7, Block 41, T1S, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on preliminary subdivision, fourth filing to replat of Lot 1, NS, 381.62 feet of Lot 2, Block 21 subdivision, third filing in Section 6, Block 43, T2S, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and approve the final line item transfers for fiscal year 2022, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and approve the final year-end budget amendments for fiscal year 2022, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and approve various budget amendments for the carry forward of outstanding encumbrances from FY 2022 to FY 2023. Consider and approve the accounts payable fund requirements report for December 6, 2022 to review county fiscal statements and reports.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.